Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. One of the things that's happened in our conversations with the theme about community is this ever-present theme about form and essence. What's the essence or the intention of the community? How does it manifest into a kind of form that works for people? Is there a blending that happens? Can you start with a community and come to the essence? Or does it seem like the essence needs to be there before the form takes place? This is an ongoing conversation, I think, from the very beginning of time. And if we go back to the very primordial communities, which were tribes and little groups of people and possibly animals, the form and the essence came together because survival was really the bottom line. And communities came together in order for people to survive, because it was very hard for a single person to survive by themselves. And as life got more complicated, then the communities grew larger. The skill set had to be a lot more diverse. And now we're living in these huge cities that some people call communities. And we have huge number of skill set. We have a huge number of choices of who we want to fulfill those skills for us and serve us in our own way. And it's a very interesting topic to get into, because in our modern day, I feel that there is a theme to get back to community. And one of the major themes is coming up again, and that's survival. With the perceived economic downfall and the tightening of belts and the fear that goes along with that, which is too bad. The good news is, though, that people are turning to each other and turning to their local community. Maybe it's their own neighborhood, maybe it's a co-op community, maybe it's a Reiki community, in order to really be able to feel the safety of survive and to survive this particular period of time. I have with me Dawn Fleming today. She's living just up the road, as we might say, in Phoenix. And she's been a Reiki master for many years and has a lot of experience in Reiki community and in other communities. And I want to welcome Dawn to the show. And Dawn, it's wonderful to have you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I would love it if we could start with, as usual, your Reiki story. Let us know how you met Reiki.
Okay. I have a daughter, and when she was 5 years old, we were told she had a cataract on her eye, and they did surgery to take the cataract off, but what they found was that I was very lazy because it wasn't being used. And they said if we patch it, within a couple months, we'll see a lot of results of it getting better. And so we patched, and months went by, and there was no movement. It wasn't getting better at all, and her eyesight in that eye was 20/800.
Wow.
And so they're patching the good eye, and she has very little vision out of that eye. And I worked for the federal government at the time and was talking about it to friends, and some of my friends said to me, "Can we work on your daughter?" And I said, "Work on my daughter? What do you do?" And some of them did Reiki and some of them did chakra balancing. And I said, "Does it hurt?" And they said, "No." And so I said, "Go ahead, work on her." And it was mostly absentee. It was a little bit hands-on. And we were going to the doctors every 2 months. And so when we went back to the eye doctor, she said, "Wow, what I'm doing is working." And it had dropped like 100 points. Whereas the whole year before that, it had only dropped like 20 points, and within 2 months it dropped. You know, we got within 100 points better of eyesight.
Wow, that's incredible.
So I thought, well, I need to learn how to do this. And at first I went and began learning chakra balancing. What I found with that is it had so many rules, and to me, it helped me get on the path, but I just didn't feel aligned with it. And then a friend of mine said, you've got to take Reiki. You'll really love it. And I said, well, I really feel this calling to do this work. So I signed up for the Reiki 1 class. And when I, you know, the attunements were wonderful. I could feel the heat for days going up and down my spine and in my neck. I could feel my hands hot. It was just wonderful. I knew that Reiki was going to be my thing. And so my daughter began getting hands-on Reiki at home. And the doctor, as Amanda was getting better and better, the doctor said, it'll never get better than 2100. And when we were finished, like several years later, her eyesight was down to 2050. Pretty much, pretty close to perfect.
Well, that's pretty normal as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. From that point on, you know, Reiki has just been wonderful in my life. In 93 is when I took the Reiki 1 course, and I completed the Reiki Master in 96. And it became so much a part of my life that in 2001, I resigned from my government job, which a lot of people would never do that. And I resigned from that to do this as my calling. It's just been wonderful.
Well, that's an amazing story. So did a lot of people think that you were fairly crazy, we might say, for quitting a government job? Because it's a kind of guaranteed...
Oh, it's a guaranteed a lot of retirement. I mean... My family were like calling me up saying, are you crazy? You should think about this. You're going to give up a retirement. You're going to give up this, that, and the other. And it was just so strong in my beingness. I had a part-time Reiki practice and was teaching several weekends a month and a couple days during the week. And it was growing. And there wasn't any more room in my life for anything else. And my husband said, maybe it's just time to step out of the government job and do what you feel has been your calling.
Oh, so, that's beautiful.
So I appreciated that. And when I stepped out, at first I was getting, you know, a little bit into that fear and insecurity about, oh, there's all these Reiki masters out there. Maybe this wasn't a good idea, but then what I stepped into as I prayed and meditated on it was that there's so many people on the planet that need help, and that those who need whatever it is that I have to give will come to me, and those who need the other practitioners will go to them. And so I began practicing, like seeing every practitioner being very successful when I would meditate. So
that's wonderful. That's great, because, you know, there's a new, well, it isn't really new, but it seems new because we've been in competition for so long, just in general on the planet, that there's this new wave coming where, you know, the obvious thing is to wish everyone the same success, to want everyone to have the same benefits, to be able to be as invested in your neighbor's welfare as your own. And I think that that's a whole nother rendition of love your neighbor as you would yourself.
It's taking it to another level. And
it is. It's wonderful. Good for you.
In my book, Creating a Successful Holistic Health Practice, I do talk about, you know, looking at your fears around things about being, you know, self-employed, but about, like you said, turning that around and not looking at it as being competitive, but just holding everyone as being successful.
Right.
What great group energy if we all did that, how right. that would impact all the holistic health practitioners and what they're doing. It would take it to a new level.
Right. And, you know, it's like taking it away from, like, the individual. This is this really interesting paradox that we all live in as human beings, where we have our individual needs and our individual development, but it only makes sense if the community comes with us, and it only makes sense if the community benefits. And that's part of the issue, I think, that is really rocking the boat these days on the governmental level. I think on the actually grassroots level in many countries, and certainly in this country, communities are starting to draw together because that's the natural tendency in
yeah.
times like this.
And I think we've all these big shifts is what's bringing the communities together, because we've been so far into our own minds and our own thing, just living on the computers or being away from society, that I think the big shifts and changes are really having people reach out and connect and find community and find that support.
I agree, and that's great. Good for you. So, in your travels, have you always lived in Phoenix when you were having, you know, going through this process with your daughter and so on?
No, I lived in the Maryland area, and uh-huh. I just moved here to the Phoenix Chandler area in 2006. And so when I began teaching Reiki in 1996, as a matter of fact, I didn't even know I was going to teach Reiki. It was like right after I got my Reiki Master attunement in class that I had two students show up and say, you're going to be my teacher. And that's how it all began. And, you know, after that, it's amazing when you come into alignment with what's yours to do, how people show up. And after that point, the students kept coming, and the community began being built.
That's great. So what do you do in your Reiki community? Do you have, like, Reiki share groups and other meetings? Or I'm just wondering how you, you know, what kind of structure do you provide?
Well, when I lived in Maryland, we had a Reiki share once a month. And at that time, I had founded a nonprofit. It was called the Beacon of Light Center. It was a spiritual center that allowed us to come together once a week where we addressed different topics on healing. But once a month, we did the Reiki share. And then every once in a while, we would have a meeting where people could just talk about what was up with them with regard to Reiki, and maybe different ways people were using Reiki, incorporating Reiki into their lives. And then every once in a while, we'd have a meeting for the Reiki Masters so that they could ask questions, they could share, they could talk about, you know, where they needed support. And we tried on a yearly basis to have a Reiki retreat, where we'd go away either for a weekend or for a day and just kind of nourish each other in the energy of the community and the energy that comes out of being together in the community.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, when all of a sudden my life went from being connected to one group of friends to, you know, all my friends became Reiki people. So it was like wherever I went, it was a Reiki community, and everyone on my board of directors was a Reiki master, and my two daughters became Reiki masters, and then when I remarried, my husband became a Reiki master. So I've just lived life in Reiki community.
Well, you know, I have this, I just laughed because I have this kind of funny thing that I do. I don't know why. I have this thing about balance, I guess. And I'm not a Libra, but I must maybe have some kind of hint of Libra somewhere in me. But I always have to have at least one or two friends who don't have Reiki in my life.
Oh, I have plenty of those. I do.
And well, I don't, because you know it's just like whenever after a while, whenever you know I'm around people, they want to know what Reiki is. So lately, I've had these treasured friends who are going like, "How come you never talk about Reiki with me?" And I'm going, "Because you're my
I love it.
non-Reiki friend, and I want to keep you that way." They said, "Well, you know, you can't control us. You know, this is not okay." So we got into a Reiki talk, and I have a feeling in another year they're going to be initiated, and I'm going to have to go out and find a couple more non-Reiki friends. So it's very interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, fascinating. So do you have a sort of a Reiki story that you want to share with us? Something about community and maybe, you know, a treatment process that happened through community or,
Yes.
yeah, that'd be great.
It was interesting the caring that comes out of the community, and when we would have students that all of a sudden were going through a healing crisis, I would try to arrange for some kind of group Reiki session. And we had one gentleman who had, was it skin cancer that had metastasized to the whole lymph system.
Oh, wow.
And the first go around, what I did is I arranged for 6 hours for him to be at my house on a table with breaks at each hour. But at each hour, we had at least three or four Reiki practitioners come in and do a session on him. And then he would take a break. And then the next hour, three or four more Reiki practitioners would come in and do Reiki on him. And this went on for 6 hours. And my husband and I, we participated. And I mean, when he like floated out of my house,
I can
and
imagine.
it put everything into remission for 18 months. And then when it came back, I just put the word out to the community, and I had 24 people show up at my house. And we had put the table in the middle of my family room and put him on it. We put chairs all the way around the table. And I told people there's not enough room for everyone to stand around the table, but we'll take turns. So at 20-minute point, I will ring a little bell, and those who want to sit down can sit down, and those who want to stand up can stand up. And so that worked well because there was about 6 to 8 people working on him each go around. And near the end, we had someone that was working who passed out.
Oh no.
And I was at the other end of the table. I didn't even see it. And somebody said to me, so and so is on the floor over there. And so I went over, but you know, people didn't even move. I went over, and two of the gentlemen near her just picked her up, put her on the sofa, and turned around and kept working. And I said to her, "Did you not eat dinner?" Or she said, "No, the energy came whipping around that table so strong that I just was like knocked over." And so I got her a washcloth and I got her some water, and I just continued. But it was interesting, that didn't even break the energy of what was going on. And you know, to be involved in these, we've had other people who had cancer issues going on where we arranged group healing sessions. And it's just amazing that it's not only that energy, it's that community love that's there. And I think a lot of people out, you know, on their outer worlds, outside the community, they aren't getting this depth of unconditional love. And I would sit there and just be in awe at the beauty of this just unconditional giving. I mean, it was really incredible.
And what place do you think that has in healing?
Well, I think the unconditional love helps open us up to receive the healing. I think that sometimes whenever issues we're carrying or beliefs get in the way of that energy coming fully within us. And I think that unconditional love creates that safe space and just helps to open our hearts for the transformation that can occur, that's there waiting for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess that it would be good, just to get in a little bit of a Reiki talk, to talk a little bit about healing. What is your sense of healing as a, you know, as a, I don't know, quality or a definition? Because I'm just, to put it into some kind of context, I hear people say, oh, you know, this is a healing community. And I don't really know sometimes what they mean by that.
That's interesting, because that, I mean, that could have so many layers.
Yes.
Of meaning. And, you know, for me, a healing community is one that supports healing on all levels, the body, mind, emotion, spirit. It supports it supports us in connecting back with our true essence and to live from that true self that is infinite and can connect to all, you know, possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that has come up sometimes in what I would call healing communities is that we forget that healing sometimes isn't pretty and it's not always peaceful. And that it calls out from, I mean, you know, my opinion, healing calls out in each one of us a level of what I might call compassion or understanding that goes far beyond what our logical mind can hold. So, you know, sometimes I call it teaching, but really it's about healing. It's like if somebody comes, well, I'll just give you a story and see if you can relate to this. In one of my first classes, it was on Orcas Island, and this woman had been my organizer for several years, and she organized this class, and many of them had had multiple Reiki treatments and so on, so it was a really neat class to teach. And one of the people who came to the class was a Vietnam vet, and he was a pretty big guy, and of course very in shape. This was in like the late 1980s, and he was really angry, and whenever he got Reiki, whenever he had Reiki, this anger would come up in him, and you could just feel the ripples of anger come off of him. So we decided as a group, and with him included, that at some point during the class, we would all just gather around and give him Reiki until he couldn't handle it anymore. So we decided that the technique was that he would get off the table, and instead of screaming and yelling, he didn't want to do that. He decided that he would run. So he would go out the door and just run. And sometimes we wouldn't see him for the rest of the class. But it was really interesting. And this continued after the class. The class, there was a very strong Reiki community there. I didn't live there, but I, you know, traveled back and forth. And he went back to this group, you know, the Reiki share groups, and he did the same thing. And eventually, his stay on the table was longer and longer and longer, and his anger subsided, and You know, they really celebrated the day that he could lay on the table and receive a full treatment.
Wow.
And it was a wonderful experience of community, but also of their capacity to hold him in a very scary place for most of them. Like, not just emotionally scary, but physically scary sometimes. Not that he intended to be violent to the other people, but when it's that strong, you can't help, as another human being, to have a little bit of, I'm wondering if this is really safe here. So it was a great experience for that community, and I really appreciated the way that they worked it out, and he worked it out for himself, but also the way that Reiki supported everyone in that process, supported him in his anger, supported others in their fear, and supported others in holding the space for everything that went on. It was a great experience for me and one of my great teaching stories.
Wow. And for me, our Reiki community would sometimes go up to a healing share at the, house for AIDS patients up in Baltimore City.
Uh-huh.
And as you approached the house where the clinic was, you could feel your hands and feet like heating up. And when I teach Reiki, I always teach my students about honoring the person on the table, and that means stepping out of judgment. And so we would get into this house, and the evening they would have the Reiki share, they would open it up to even people from on the streets.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it was a very interesting Reiki share, and our group was kind of enmeshed with other Reiki groups that were coming to share. And when I would teach working in group Reiki, we really don't talk much over the person's body. So we had the other dynamic of some of the other groups talking and doing all kinds of stuff over the body. So we had to kind of allow our energy to be a part of the whole thing, but also keeping our focus. And I just remember the first time that we had a homeless person come in for Reiki, and he had sores on his body, and he really smelled, and he was on our table. And at first that part of me was all of a sudden, you know, going into his story and looking at the sores. And of course we didn't put our hands on because of the sores, but we had our hands over his body. And I just thought, John, you need to be aligned in this place of love. And so we all held hands as a group and connected into this wonderful place, and we began doing the Reiki. And what was really beautiful was this man on the table was just oohing and aahing, and he said, "This is so wonderful. Thank you. This is so beautiful." And I just feel like the whole experience made us step out of judgment and allowed us to feel the oneness with him and with everything, and just allowed us to understand what unconditional love is and what healing is. And, you know, I feel like I had a lot of my issues healed that evening, and just had my heart and my capacity to being a healing presence open and expand.
That is a gorgeous story, too. Wonderful. That's great. Because, it's a very humbling experience to do this work. And it's wonderful when there's an openness to that peace inside of ourselves. Yeah. So, good work. That's great. So what happened to your Reiki community back in Maryland when you moved out to Arizona?
Well, there seemed to be a couple of Reiki masters who stepped up, and they have continued the monthly Reiki shares. And this year, well, when I came out here, I was going back and forth for a while because my house had not sold.
Uh-huh.
And I was still connecting with them for about a year. And while I was living out here in our one-bedroom apartment, I really couldn't take clients doing that, so I started doing a lot of writing. And just this year, I've kind of connected back in with the Reiki community here, and I'm teaching Reiki up at SWEHA, the Southwest Institute of Healing Arts, and I'm feeling like I'm beginning to build or be a part of another Reiki community, and it feels good to have that connection again, because since I've been here, I've missed that that connection with the community back east. Even though it's only a phone call away or I can see them when I go back, it's nice to have it where you're planted.
Uh-huh. Yes, I agree. Do you have any insight into what the value is of having a physical community next to you?
It is so wonderful, and I'll speak to it from a couple perspectives.
Okay.
You know, when you get the new students into the Reiki class, they're so excited because they've been reading about it, or they've been hearing about it, or they've experienced it, and there's no one else in their family that they can talk to about it.
Right.
Because it's too weird.
Right.
You know, having that Reiki community right there in near where you're living allows you to have other people that validate that essence that's within you, that essence that knows it's to be part of something about healing.
Uh-huh.
That essence of you that's trying to heal and trying to connect to something greater than yourself. And so I would see the Reiki 1 students all excited. It was hard to even get them to be quiet to teach because they were feeling the energy and excitement of being in the community of like-minded people and having some people finally to share what they were experiencing with.
Uh-huh.
For a while I had, for 10 years, I had a emailing Reiki request list, and people sent me in requests for absentee Reiki once a week. I would send out an email to over 700 people that were Reiki people and would just put the names on the list who wanted healing. And if the people wanted to share what they wanted healing for, I put that out there. And the feedback that we would get from people who had put in requests was incredible. We had one person whose mother had a stroke, and she had sent me the request, and I just sent it out right away to the whole group. And the stroke was so bad that they thought that she was going to die, and if she wasn't going to die, that she's going to have permanent, really terrible damage and be a vegetable. And this person is living and breathing and out working. And
wow.
You know, she's a little bit slower than what she was, but she's functioning on all levels. And when, like, several months later, when she was able to write, you know, she typed me an email thanking me and the community for that. She said while she was going through that process, she could feel the energy coming in waves, and she knew she was going to be fine. So it's wonderful that the community is there even working for one another when we're not even together, you know, through the absentee, and that's just really beautiful. And for me, I mean, the community just kept giving me, you know, that validation that sometimes when you've walked away from your government job and you go, wow. It was just validation over and over again that, you know, you are on the right path and this is exactly where you're supposed to be. Because one day, you know, if you're kind of doubting yourself, all of a sudden there's an email or a phone call or a client that shows up and says, you know, you've changed my life. And I know better that, you know, they changed their life. But it just kind of feels good to get some validation once in a while.
Right.
Kind of saying that. So just the Reiki community is so important for those who are choosing this path, because when you are having those bad days, you can reach out and, you know, feel the love, feel the Reiki energy. And one thing that I find, though, is a lot of people doing Reiki don't go and receive Reiki. They're just giving and giving and giving. And the Reiki community for the Reiki shares is a way to give and to receive. And sometimes it's important to understand your own body rhythms and to know when it's time to reach out to go get a Reiki session.
Well, I think one of the things that's so important in community is this idea of completing the cycle. So, you know, if you give, then you need to receive in the same amount. It's like there, because otherwise it creates inequality within the circle.
Yeah.
And that really ends up in a very strange, ends up in some very strange energetic situations.
Correct, correct.
Yeah. So how do you get people to receive? Because that's a tough one.
Well,
I'm interested in your strategies.
Well, I'd say I just keep preaching, you know, the benefits and showing, you know, when the cup gets empty when you decide not to not to receive.
Right.
And that it's better not to get empty and down to a healing crisis. Better to do preventative maintenance and just keep that Reiki cup filled.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, it's that part of it's really interesting because, you know, I think people are drawn to Reiki who are natural givers, and, you know, we all have our own motivations. But that's part of the, for me, part of the very deeper understanding of healing community is the ability to receive and to understand that being able to receive in the same manner that you are giving is a gift.
Yes.
And that's something that I feel like our society has a hard time in demonstrating. And I certainly didn't learn that very much in my childhood, although it could have been there, I just didn't get it. So I see that I spend a lot of my time, you know, as a master and as a cheerleader for my students, really trying to find ways for them to understand that receiving is a gift.
Yeah, and necessary.
And necessary, yeah. Unnecessary. And so, Don, in your work in Reiki communities, what do you feel like is the most challenging piece for you?
Well, you know, I think the world is just changing so quickly, and the challenging piece is really helping people stay out of that place of fear. And holding that light, having people being able to, and I'm talking about people in the community, helping them just use their Reiki gifts. I mean, when times are bad, the best thing you can do is give Reiki to yourself, send Reiki to your goals, ask the community for Reiki help.
Mm-hmm.
So I think right now one of the challenging things is to keep the community and those involved from moving into fear. And to moving into that place of fearlessness. And, you know, we have younger people coming on board into the Reiki community and keeping the space open for the younger perspective that's coming in. And embracing the energy of from all levels and all ages.
Well, you know, there are... a lot of my colleagues are my age and older. And so, you know, because of just our long-term relationship and so on, we don't see so many what we might call young people, although I don't have any fear about young people being drawn to Reiki, but some of my colleagues do. And I'm just wondering, you mentioned young people, and I'm just wondering if you have a sense of that, that they are also wanting to find ways to connect with themselves, and they somehow don't have, it's not such a big deal for them.
It seems
like it anyway.
You know, I'm teaching up at the school right now, and the school where I'm at is considered to be like a community college. So a lot of the students, you know, they're taking Reiki as like an elective. And that's a strange thing for me to even think about. Because I feel like Reiki is a calling. It's something that you go take and practice because it's where you feel drawn to.
Right.
As opposed to being an elective.
Right.
And I may show up one time or I may show up 40 minutes late. And I may fully participate and I might not. And so that's been interesting for me to have to look at my shadow on, you know, judging it or non-judging it or whatever. That's been like, okay, Dawn, you have some work to do around this. And, but also the students, and so I am seeing a lot of the younger folks, like those in their early 20s and mid 20s.
Yeah.
Who are, taking the course. And there's some who know that this is it for me. And I enjoy seeing their enthusiasm, in it. So it's really opened my eyes to the whole, to a whole different perspective of, I don't know, casual Reiki. when I was taught it out in Maryland and I was teaching out of my home and I taught at a hospital and a community college, it was more people were very serious about, you know, being there and
right.
What they wanted to do with it. And some people would be there because they had someone at home that had an illness.
Right.
Some wanted to be there because they felt like they needed help and they thought this was going to be it. And other people were there kind of curious on why they were being called to be there and they were exploring it. And it was, you know, taken much more seriously and much more honor and connection with everyone in the room versus a more casual approach to it.
So describe this casual approach. I'm all ears.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I may come on in time.
Right.
To class. I may show up 45 minutes late. I might have to leave in the middle of the attunement because I scheduled something else, but I'll be back in a half hour. And can you rearrange the time you're doing one of the attunements so that I don't have to miss it altogether? Or can, you know, you do me first and then I'll just sneak out.
Right.
You know, and then I may be late coming back from lunch. And so that's kind of like the, and when I taught, my classes seemed to be, my class size is a lot smaller than what I'm dealing with at the school level.
Right.
And so I think that turns it more into a casual situation versus a small, intimate
right.
situation.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing is, I just had this kind of flash, so I don't know if this connects for you, but it does for me. It's like, well, it's sort of like, just imagine if you were an English teacher or something, the way that young people are texting and the way that the English language is actually being changed dramatically in the last 5 years. And I'm sure, I mean, I'm kind of an old fuddy-duddy. I can't stand text language, and I actually can't read it a lot of times. So I tell my nephews and nieces, you know, get real, call me on the phone or forget about it because I can't read your texts. But it's the same thing, and it doesn't, one of the things that I have to get over, I feel, is that it doesn't mean that they're any less serious. You know, this is the thing that's so interesting about the, you know, the generation that's coming up now that are in their 20s and in their teens. It's like they have a lot of serious issues and they see the seriousness of it, but they don't want to spend time in, you know, getting the detail right if the detail doesn't actually matter to them. And that's just like a whole antithesis to the way that I was educated. Yeah. So I'm wondering if you have this feeling also that even though they, you know, you could say, well, they don't recognize the seriousness or the sacredness of this, you know, in the end, they might have gotten it and it just doesn't look the same.
And I would agree with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that, that helps me.
Yeah. What I think is that, all of us who come, you know, who raised this Reiki awareness and put this Reiki light out into the world.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, those who have come in, like you said, they're in their early 20s and teens. I think they came in already attuned. And maybe the attitude is, so what about all that information? Let's just get to the meat of doing it. And let's just do it. You know, who needs all these details? I really feel like those who've been birthed that are in their 20s and teens are benefiting from like an energy attunement that's here for them because of all that, how the energy has already been raised on the planet by those other light workers who've been working for so long.
Uh-huh.
So it's like they don't have to work as hard as we work, because in some way they're already tuned in, and whereas maybe we put up with nonsense in many areas of our lives growing up, they're not going to, like, you know, don't give me all that, just give me the bottom line and, you know, show me how to do this. And, you know, maybe there's something in that.
Right.
No.
Right.
But I'm open. I'm open to just, you know, see things a different way. There's always a part of me that can grow and learn from anyone that I meet. And so I am open to it.
That's great, Dawn. Well, you know, it's been wonderful talking to you. And I have this little note on another interview that I had earlier. And we were talking before we started the interview about the word vocation and the essence of vocation. And that I just feel that to be a Reiki master is our vocation. And it comes from a calling, which you had mentioned before. And the calling comes from, you know, in the dictionary it says, from an individual, an organization, or community. But I feel that it's kind of like the chicken and the egg, like which comes first? Does our calling come from this Reiki community to those who want to be masters? Or as people who have found our vocation, do we then create the community around us? And it's just interesting to listen to your stories and to see that same pattern being demonstrated in your life with Reiki.
Yes. And it seems like initially I kind of entered a very small group of healers when we were working with my daughter. It was like they invited me in and were showing me how to do the chakra balancing.
Right.
And then once I stepped into Reiki and owned Reiki as my path, it's like I grew a community around me, a very large community, and, you know, which I'm so grateful, and it just continues to grow.
Well, that is fabulous, Dawn. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. It's been a wonderful, wonderful conversation.
Yes, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.